For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, Bodhisattvas. Especially welcome to new people. It's lovely to see you sitting so beautifully upright your first day here. So, happy winter solstice. It officially occurred last night at 10:19 p.m. So today and yesterday were tied for being the shortest day of the year, 2019. 9 hours, 7 minutes, and 46 seconds of daylight. And after today, we'll be over the hump and ready for the light to slowly return to our lives. So I want you to know, we can celebrate that tomorrow daylight will be 4 seconds longer. Amazing, isn't it? So, as we all know, this is the season for all of our holidays of light and joy and all our wishes for peace on earth. It's the time when we celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment with our longest sesshin of the year, which we did a couple of weeks ago. And mentally, we're preparing for the new year, 2020. And some of us will be making resolutions and doing self-reflection and maybe looking for some fresh starts in some aspects of our lives. It's just the way we think about things sometimes. I personally love the idea of cleaning as part of a New Year ritual. We clean our temple here every week. We'll do it today after the Dharma talk and discussion. I hope people can stay for that. Some temples use the Japanese word soji for this regular cleaning. It's basically just cleaning and putting things back in order after some activity. So I recently found a quote from Suzuki Roshi when he was abbot at San Francisco Zen Center about soji. He said, "Sweeping the path is like sweeping the mind." So I think it's more than a metaphor. It's to me, cleaning and zazen are ways of actualizing our practice. So I'm at an interesting turning point in my life when I have this significant cleaning project of a kind. I have made the decision to significantly lighten my responsibility load by selling the home that I've been living in for the past 25 years, which is a two-flat about 5 miles west of here. It's been a fine place to live, but increasingly it takes a considerable amount of my attention, my time, to manage this property responsibly. It's over 100 years old, and the past 3 years I've had to do tuck pointing, roofing, replacing furnaces. These are things that I know nothing about, and I don't have a lot of money, so that part's been a little problematic. But more important to me, I think, at age 72, is I don't have a lot of time, and I'm increasingly careful with these two resources of time and money. So I've decided that I'm ready for a grass hut. And if you don't know what this is referring to, I'm going to refer us to a poem that we recite frequently at Ancient Dragon. It's on page 9. And it was composed by an important Chinese Zen master who lived in the 8th century, Shi Tu. His dates were 700 to 790. And we won't chant it, we'll read it. Everybody got it? All right. "I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value, After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, she doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 feet square, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A Mahayana bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instructions, bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. So we always chant this this poem during camping session when we're spending time out in a natural area and we're doing without a lot of the stuff that we typically depend on in our day-to-day lives, like appliances and private bathroom and air conditioning. And my experience is camping or backpacking over the years, it's like I always have this feeling of liberation. Well, first there's a feeling of anxiety, and then there's a feeling of liberation. It's thrilling to be in a world that feels small and manageable and intimate. So there's a lovely book called Inside the Grass Hut by a person named Ben Connolly, who's been a visiting teacher here. He wrote a nice thing in my book. I just noticed this morning. I forgot that I had got it directly from him. Anyway, Tigan wrote the foreword to this book, and he says this poem that we just read offers a clear, helpful model for actual Zen practice and for how to create a space of practice. So what I'm thinking of is creating a space of practice that's synonymous with my space of living. So I'm really setting out to pretty dramatically simplify some parts of my life. I remembered recently that when my dad died, more than 20 years ago now, my youngest sibling, Peter, said something like, I can't believe he has so little to show for his whole life. And Peter was referring to things like property and bank accounts, which were pretty non-existent for my dad. And I must say, I agreed with him when he said that, but I was thinking also of intimate relationships and positive life experiences, which were also not so much. But our dad did leave 7 adult children, which is, that's not nothing. That's something of a legacy. So I'm not really sure how to make an accounting of what we have to show for our whole life, but I'm pretty sure it isn't. The unit is not volume of stuff. And this poem that we just read seems to be teaching us the opposite, that we can maybe measure success, if that's the right word, through lack of stuff. So that's what it feels like to me at this moment. That's sort of where my life is at. And it feels like our life can be measured in our ability to let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. I love those words. So, as I've been looking at this project of moving, I've been thinking about, so what do I need? What do I want day to day? And what am I comfortable eventually leaving behind for others to deal with when I'm gone? So I'm doing all this house cleaning, sort of literal and figurative house cleaning. And I also want to mention, because it seems relevant, that more than one person in my family has been stricken with the disease of hoarding. And I've had direct experience with dealing with that horror. and interesting, I just learned there's another disease that's the opposite of hoarding. It's called obsessive compulsive Spartanism, which I think I'm teetering on the edge of. This is a disease which is the compulsion to rid oneself of belongings in a way that is unhealthy. So I'm looking for the middle way. Anyway, it's turned out to be a pretty interesting exercise in looking at my feelings about my stuff, my attachments to my stuff. I have a lot of things that feel personal or beautiful. I mean, I have boxes of things like deer antlers, percussion instruments from indigenous communities in South America, dozens and dozens of hardback journals that I've kept over the decades. And I'm definitely not going to move all this stuff that I've accumulated. It's like 25 years in this building, and then not to mention there's stuff that I brought to this building when I moved last time. There's some boxes in the basement that haven't ever even been looked at since they were moved there. And there's these boxes that came from my office when I retired 6 years ago. So I have made a vow that I'm not going to burden my daughter with this task of dealing with this mountain of my possessions. So this is a good time to divest myself of a lot of crap if I could figure out which is which. So I'm sorting it, and I'm putting it into categories. And one category is looking at things that I can give as gifts. This has been fun. A lot of fun. It's been enjoyable, interesting. Who would love this? Who would cherish this thing that I, you know, find beautiful or in some way compelling? I was so happy to see the note in the kitchen that said they wanted tablecloths. Okay, I found a couple. I've got some more. And Tupperware, too. All right. You're getting it, Bo. So, yeah, anyone else want to drop any hints? So, books in particular, I've been trying to offer to people that I think might enjoy them. I've given some to the Ancient Dragon Library, but it feels like matchmaking. It's like who might enjoy this? And it's sort of an intimate experience to give someone a book that I've loved and held on to. But this other category is stuff to send to the thrift store. So that's clothes, like kitchen items, small furniture. And I realize a lot of these things originally came from a thrift store, so they're just going back to where they came from. And I have tried to find a thrift store that it's not for profit and benefits something I care about, so that there would be some positive outcome. So Brown Elephant seems to be a good place to bring things. They benefit the Howard Brown Health Center. And then there's this category of garbage. This one is problematic. I really hate putting things in the garbage. I don't have to tell people in this room about our overflowing landfills. You know, they're full of things. They're full of things that will be here long after we're gone. And the oceans are dying from plastic, and there's poisons, and recycling is pretty much a complete failure in our country. But for something that there really don't, there doesn't seem to be any choice except putting them in the garbage. So that's been something to just face up to. It is what it is. I really think that in the future, if there's some form of intelligent life that's looking at our civilization, they are going to be completely baffled by our stupidity, it's like our recklessness, and how we've created things and then discarded them. But the ultimate, my ultimate goal is to select some things that I want to keep with me for a while longer, and that I'll move with me. And I'm ending up with this large pile of things in my mind that I've sort of mentally labeled pending. So why is this a topic of a Dharma talk? If we think back to the what I quoted Suzuki Roshi saying, so sweeping the path is like sweeping the mind. I'm finding this process of simplifying and purging to be a sort of a feedback loop with my zazen. It's as if zazen clears my mind, and then my mind wants to clear the space, and then the clearer space helps me clear my mind. And so the older I get, the more I'm attracted to both order and quiet. And that's what I hear in this poem about the grass hut. It's like letting go of struggle, letting go of grasping. And it's a disorienting process, and I mean that in a very good way. I mean, I want to be pushed out of not paying attention to it. So some of you have heard me talk about my sister-in-law, who is now 88, and she lives in a nursing home not too far from here, and every time I visit, which is fairly frequently, she tells me the same thing. And every time she says it, it's as if she's just realized it again. She's a little forgetful, but I do think this is a thing that she's still thinking, grasping what it is. So what she says is, my entire life is in this little space now. So she's in a bed in half of a room at a nursing home, and there's a curtain that divides her from the other person in her room. So she has a television. She can't walk, so she's pretty much in bed. And she can't look out the window because she chose the half of the room that has the door. You got to choose a window or a door. She chose the door. And she says this is okay. She says she has everything she needs because people bring her her food and her meds, and they take care of her physical needs. And she didn't choose this simplified life. You know, this simplified life came because she had a medical, very serious medical problem. And so there she went from her house, she's one of the hoarders in our family, into this very place that's about 10 feet square. And she doesn't seem either depressed or angry or resentful, though. She seems to be adjusting, which I find remarkable, and I'm sort of in awe of it. And I'm learning from her. So I'm not suggesting that we should all go out. You should all go out and get rid of all your stuff. Although it might feel good to do some of that. But I mainly want to say that as we go through life, our circumstances change. Sometimes we have control over that, some parts of it, and some not. And I always hear, and it's true, that as we get older, we experience loss. That is definitely true. I definitely miss my 20/20 vision. I definitely miss my good hearing. A lot of other things, my ability to take the 50-pound bag of birdseed from my trunk to my house, it's still sitting there, until some strong person helps me out. But this urge to do intentional simplifying does not feel like loss. It feels like the opposite. It feels like the gain of order and quiet. So that's my talk. I want to say happy solstice and happy new year. And I want to be sure that everyone knows that we will have a wonderful event here on New Year's Eve for Zazen and Good Cheer. We'll think doors will open at 8:45. You can come for as much or as little as you like, but treats will be served after midnight. And then on New Year's morning, there'll be another opportunity for Zazen, and I think treats as well. So if you can come on New Year's Eve and you know that you're going to come, and please let me know today, because I'm looking for people to help with greeting and ringing of bells. So thank you. We should have a discussion now, right? I'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on the poem or on anything else.
Comments, responses.
Yes.
This year for Christmas, I asked my family, and in fact my family, to give me the gift of being free from being lured into more material objects.
Well, how'd they respond?
They don't like it. They really want to give me stuff. And it's somewhat difficult to convince them that not giving me a physical thing is in fact a gift to me, but I don't have more things that I have to take care of.
Right.
It's hard to convince the other people in your life.
Yeah. I don't know what to do about that except to just keep saying it, talking about it. You can give them a copy of this poem. That'll throw them. Kelsey.
That's going through my mind more than it used to. But I was thinking about how it feels like. I haven't been to Greek culture in a long time, but when I was there as a guest practice retreatant, I remember thinking after a week of being in a room where you have your basic needs met.
Yeah.
space is a little bit more empty and focusing on what needs attention from just being here and doing this practice.
Yeah, I remember when, oh no, I can't think of his name. What was the name of the priest that came and spent 6 months with us? Hakusho. So Hakusho had been used to living in a monastic situation where, as you say, all of his needs were met. You know, meals, I mean, he had to participate, but meals appeared and everything pretty much. And so then he moved here for 6 months and he was living with David. And he's like, all this time to do all this stuff. He felt like he was so busy with things that took up his time. And it was a revelation to him how free it was to not have the... Kathy, I was thinking maybe you would like some deer antlers. I could. Hogetsu. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, he's. I'm sorry.
Which are pretty minimal.
It's a short list, yeah.
Roads, some medicine, a begging bowl, needle and thread to repair things. I think that was about it. But I think that there's something also that it's not whether you have more or less of something, but is that, how does that support practice? Like that's how I, you know, some people have been in my home. That's how I've arranged my home. So I have more things than I need, but people come and visit, so I like to have a place to host people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's sometimes there can be this question, oh, I'm getting rid of everything. But, you know, it's not getting rid of things. It's creating a certain situation that supports and expresses.
Yep.
Awakening, that's a grass hut. The grass hut could be Mar-a-Lago.
That's the first time those words have ever been spoken. Interesting.
And so I've been trying to examine my own life in terms of Buddhist principles and, you know, clearing things out. And for myself, I think it was an example of the person is, you know, has lots of this stuff, like lots of stuff, but they're not, part of it was not being aware of time passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like this person thought it looked like I just got it at Walgreens, and it really doesn't.
about it for myself, all this stuff, that some of it is wanting to stay back there when I got the stuff or when it was operating in my life, that it's, in terms of focusing on Buddhism and what I'm practicing, I have to focus on, okay, that was great, but it's not what's going on now. I have to keep looking at how everything changes. So that's been my focus for it.
That's interesting about finding a place where people might want those papers. It'd be a great thing for us to share with each other if we know places where people can use things. I mean, just like the tablecloths. But a few times when I've traveled in places, villages that are sort of remote and don't have many, we've been told the children really can use paper and pencil and crayons. And so, you know, you sort of find stuff that to us is, that's such, so treasured. And so there are places where some of this stuff can be of real value, but we don't know much about it. Maybe there's some, is there some not-for-profit that matches stuff with needy people? It's sort of ringing a bell. Does anybody know about
there
it?
There is one, it's called Share Your Souls, that they take shoes that you want, and then they ship them actually to, you know, mostly Africa.
Yeah.
And they, so because part of the requirement to go to school is you have to have a pair of shoes. So this way children can go to school and get educated. So it's a double benefit.
So when I was in Bhutan last year, I was talking to a Bhutanese guy who told me that there was a place on the Bhutan-India border where all the stuff that Americans donate to charity end up in the market for sale. He was quite cynical about he wanted to let me know, as an American, that we shouldn't, don't be so quick to believe in whatever, I don't know. It's probably still better off in the market than it is in this landfill in Chicago. How are we doing on time? Okay, we have some time. Ryan.
And praise of things. you know, somebody said one time that monks and nuns often take a vow of simplicity or poverty or whatever, but they happen to live in some of those beautiful places in the world surrounded by beautiful,
yes,
tasteful, simple objects. 5 years ago, so I've lost track of time. We moved here from a much larger place to a smaller place, and we got rid of easily half of 30 years' worth of stuff. And two things about that. One is that I look around, and we only kept the stuff that we love, or is useful. And everywhere I look, it's either something that's very useful or something I love. And that's a positive thing about things, is that when you simplify sometimes, it's like that. And the other thing is that I don't even remember what we got rid of. So the stuff that I do have, even if I love it or it's effective, if it would disappear tomorrow, I've already learned that it doesn't matter.
Right.
So, I don't know. As long as I have some stuff, I want to appreciate it. But I don't want to worry about it either.
Yeah, that's somehow similar to what Hogetsu was saying, I think. You know, your stuff is making your craft your life better, happier? I don't know. I am struggling with whether I will keep my piano. Oh, I can't even think about not having a piano. Anyway, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just one personal observation. I've known you now for, 6 years since I've been coming here. And I could see you talking today, a great sense of liberation and joyfulness.
Oh. Yeah,
that is just really...
How did I used to be?
I remember being at your ordination, and you know, you were so serious. Because it was a serious time to see you now. Because now you're really being in the sense that you're
okay. Messing up the... thank you. It's always great to hear how people see you. It's often surprising. Okay, maybe we're ready for the four vows.